Einen wunderschönen guten Morgen, ihr den St. Moin, ich bin der Micha und heute Morgen habe ich ein Interview für euch. Haha, und zwar ist Halloween. Halloween ist da und das heißt natürlich, dass wir über einige Horrorsachen reden und es sind natürlich auch viele Horrorspiele jetzt in letzter Zeit rausgekommen und es gibt viele Horror-Game-Sales in den PSN und Xbox Store und so weiter und so fort. Horror überall und auf Twitter, wenn ihr auf Social Media geht, dann seht ihr auch überall Leute, die dann ihren Horror-Monat starten und ganz vielen Horrorfilm-Marathon machen und ich glaube, ein neuer Halloween-Film ist ins Kino gekommen und so weiter und so fort. Es ist einfach eine wunderbare Zeit, um sich jetzt mal so unter die Decke zu kuscheln und sich Horrorkram reinzuziehen. Also ein Mangel an Horrorgames gibt es ja eh nicht. Und außerdem ist draußen eh kalt, ne? Was wollt ihr sonst machen, außer zu Hause sitzen und Horrorspiele spielen? Jo, und ich dachte, es wäre doch mal ganz cool, wenn wir an die Quelle von Horrorspielen gehen. Und zwar gibt es ein Unternehmen, das sich in den letzten Jahren, könnte man sagen, eigentlich ganz guten Ruf unter sehr vielen Horrorfans erarbeitet hat. Wobei, gut, manche Leute stehen den Spielen auch ein bisschen kritischer gegenüber. Also die werden sehr mannigfaltig aufgenommen. Aber man kann auf jeden Fall sagen, dass sie mittlerweile bekannt für ihre Horrorspiele sind. Und zwar ist das Bloober Team. Das sind die Leute, die die Medium jetzt dieses Jahr rausgebracht haben. Das kam jetzt auch in so einer neueren Version raus, in so einer Update-Version. Und die Observer gemacht haben, zusammen noch mit Rutger Hauer, eins der letzten Werke. Und Layers of Fear zum Beispiel, 1 und 2, ist auch von denen und solche Sachen. Und das ist natürlich, und Blair Witch übrigens, ne, das hatten wir, glaube ich, letztes oder vorletztes Jahr auch besprochen. Bloober Team, natürlich die Leute, die sind in Polen und entwickeln dort Spiele, die, ja, für den einen oder anderen Schreckmoment wahrscheinlich verantwortlich sind. Übrigens haben sie auch VR-Versionen von Layers of Fear und Blair Witch rausgebracht, fällt mir da jetzt gerade noch ein. Also ziemlich viel Zeug. Aber so hat Bloober Team gar nicht angefangen. Also tatsächlich haben sie vorher andere Sachen gemacht. Und generell ist die ganze Karriere von denen ziemlich interessant, könnte man fast sagen. Manche Entwicklungen haben so ein bisschen was mit Glück zu tun. Manche Entwicklungen haben sich einfach so ergeben. Und aber was man auf jeden Fall sagen kann, ist, dass dieses ganze Team von vornherein aber schon immer irgendwie Horrorspiele machen wollte. Also die haben zwar mit anderen Sachen angefangen und sind aber dann irgendwann zu ihrem Traum übergegangen und haben Horrorspiele entwickelt. Und das ist eine coole Sache. Das habe ich jetzt mir auch nicht aus den Fingern rausgesagt, sondern das hört ihr jetzt in diesem Interview. Denn ich habe Wojciech im Gespräch. Das ist einer der Kerndesigner von jetzt dem Medium und von Observer gewesen. Und der hat ein paar echt interessante Sachen zu der ganzen Geschichte vom Bloober Team erzählt und was sie überhaupt dazu bewegt hat, dem Medium zu machen und woher die ganzen Ideen kommen und was vor allen Dingen auch ihre kulturellen Einflüsse sind als polnisches Studio. Super, super interessantes Zeug. Und ich will euch da so gar nicht so lange auf die Folter spannen, weil das Interview geht ja schließlich auch ungefähr eine Stunde. Das haben wir auf Englisch geführt. Das hat in diesem Fall Sinn gemacht. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß und ich würde mich jetzt vielleicht nicht umdrehen, denn vielleicht befindet sich hinter euch etwas Unheimliches.
Yeah, thank you very much for the time. Thank you very much for joining me for this interview.
Thank you for having me here. Yeah, pleasure is mine.
Super cool. Can you please introduce yourself quickly to the audience?
Sure. So my name is Wojciech Piejko, and I'm a lead designer here at Bloober. Yes. Yeah? So I help develop the games like The Observer, Medium, and a little bit of help during the pre-production of Blair Witch. So that's my, you know, that's my stuff here at Bloober.
Ah, super cool. Wojciech, and then your games, so Bloober Team is making a little bit of a buzz right now in the horror game community. So you have been around for a few years, and before this interview, we talked a bit about the history of Bloober Team and how you managed to get yourself a name in the horror community. So how has been feedback so far from horror gamers?
It's flattering. Yeah, because somehow we managed to, you know, became a company that are, you know, the only true horror making company right now. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, many companies, you know, lean towards more action oriented titles, and we are now like, you know, more last psychological horror bastion. So it's really cool to hear that. Yeah, and of course there are people that are missing, for example, shooting in our games, and of course we completely understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are, you know, different emotions that we would like to pull. Yeah. So, yeah, it's really cool to gather all that feedback. And yeah, I really hope we, you know, our fans will be happy with our next projects.
Yeah, yeah. So
because they will be horror games. Yeah. So that's all I can say. But yeah, we are not abandoning our road here too.
Yeah, yeah. Was this something you had planned from the start to be the horror developer, or did this just turn out?
Yeah, to be honest, I've never. Of course, I dreamed about making the horror games. Yeah, yeah. Playing all those crazy good Silent Hill games, for example, the first Resident Evils and Fatal Frames. Especially, you know, I really dig Japanese horror games.
Yeah, yeah.
And you probably can feel it. Yeah, from
yeah, the yeah, game yeah.
I'm trying to make. Yeah, so yeah. To be honest, I wasn't even, you know, thinking that I will become a game developer when I was, you know, in school or something, because we don't have any studios in Poland, or they were very, really small, and so on. So yeah, when I first got a job as a game tester in a company called the Game Lion back then, so it was more like a luck for me. Yeah? My friend called me, and I was there studying at that time. And he said, okay, I've got a job as a game tester, and I will be testing games, and they are paying actual money, and they are looking for more people because the company is expanding, and would you like to, you know, try, yeah, and say, whoa, that's cool, yeah. So, yeah, the long story short, that was my, you know, entry, unexpected entry, yeah, to the game development. And then our company was, you know, making more porting than actual game development. So we were receiving a game and, you know, making it happen. It works on the other devices or other consoles and so on. So it doesn't need the real designers back then. But then, of course, the company started to making our own games and turn, you know, hire actual game designers and took few people who always have some ideas like me to, you know, to become the game design junior.
Yeah.
And after that, of course, I have learned a lot of things, you know, moved to the other companies. At some point of my game dev career, my friend who worked here in Bluebird, you know, called me and showed me the Layers of Fear prototype. And I was, oh my God, I always dream about making such a game. And he said, really? Yeah. Oh, I can, you know, get you to an interview because we are, you know, we will be building another game or cyberpunkish horror game, you know, the Observer one.
The Observer, yeah.
Yeah, so I joined the company then. So, yeah, it was like a dream come true, yeah.
Oh, super nice. I'm a little bit jealous, to be honest.
I'm a really lucky guy, yeah. I was always, you know, loving horror genre, playing horror games, watching a lot of horror flicks, So yeah, it was really a dream come true.
Super nice, but you just said that there was one big influence, the Japanese horror games, of course, and all the horror classics. So I feel like we both have super fond memories about those games from the PlayStation 2 era, from the first original Xbox and stuff like that. And there's something. For what do you think is the special thing about these old games? So what that makes them special for you?
Okay, so probably the slow burn narrative style of the game. So it wasn't, you know, a game about saving the world from monsters and so on. Yeah, so that was a game with deep personal stories, like, for example, Silent Hill 2, which I, of course, didn't, you know, understand completely back in the day. Yeah, but it was, you know, the imagination of all the monsters, of the environment, the color palette used there. So it was extraordinary. Yeah, it's like out of this world. Yeah, for me, especially for a guy living in Poland back in the day. Yeah, so this was like a super, super cool. And the stories there, the character design was absolutely amazing. That wasn't, you know, just the monsters, but really, really cool ideas. And there was always like a psychological aspect behind all those designs that I really digged when I, you know, grew up and understand more of those games. They became even more interesting, and that's awesome.
Yeah, I think Team Silent really is famous today for being the outlaws at Konami. Nobody wanted to put them in a team. So the history says that these were just like people who didn't fit to any other development team. So they put them one together and they said, yeah, Konami was like, yeah, go for it. Do this horror game thing and do whatever you want. And it turned on to be one of the most beloved horror games of all time.
Yeah, because this approach creates, you know, really good space for creativity, yeah. For unleashing your best ideas.
Yeah. I think that this is Silent Hill, of course, is super remembered, and everybody is super super sad that PT was the last sign of life.
Yeah,
so to speak. But you managed to bring back a little bit of nostalgia with the medium because you managed to get Akira Yamaoka on board.
Yeah, that was also, you know, like a dream come true for me. Yeah. So we met during the Tokyo Game Show for the first time, and to be honest, when we know. I was going there for the first meeting with Akira-san, so I was, of course, quite nervous. It was, of course, very, you know, I feel, you know, like a feeling in my stomach that something is squeezing there.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I will meet Akira Yamaoka. Yeah, I was excited and frightened at the same time. Yeah, at the very, very beginning. Yeah, of course, we were there to show him the medium game. Still professional, but of course, you know, I feel overly excited probably about this. Yeah, and the luck is that the Akira-san worked with one of my friends. His name is Rafał, and Rafał works with Akira in Grasshopper Manufacture.
Nice.
On the Shadows of the Damned. So he's a concept artist, for example. So when we first meet with Akira, and Akira mentions Rafael saying, oh, I texted with my friend today, and he told me that you will be meeting with his friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, really good connection from the very beginning. Yes. Yeah? So you are not feeling like we are out of this world or something. Yeah. We've got the same friend, for example. So that's crazy. Yeah. And then we, you know, show Akira the game. Yeah. After a long talk. Yeah. Before we ate a dinner and talk about music and so on. So it was really cool. Yeah. I was sitting there and thinking, wow.
Yeah,
I'm winning right now. Yeah, I'm sitting with Akira in Tokyo and, you know, talking about games and music. So, wow, what happened?
Yeah. Super cool.
Yeah, and then we showed him the first prototype of the medium. And, he was, of course, watching this in the restaurant. So he was, you know, sitting with the headphones and he was, you know, behind him and, you know, hope he will like it. Yeah, and then he put the headphones down. So, okay, guys, this is really cool. Yeah, I would like to know more and work with you. So it was like, yes.
Super nice. I think the medium soundtrack, this is really, I like the medium soundtrack personally because it's really split between two worlds. You can hear that from the two composers. So, of course, we got this side from Akira. But also you got the other side, and I think you had these two worlds combined in one. And this is when we're listening to it. I listened to the soundtrack first before playing the game, but I got the sense that that you managed to get this concept of two worlds in it. And but was this something you discussed with the composers beforehand they had to achieve two different kinds of personalities?
Yeah, that was our goal from the very beginning. Yes, so in Bloober we've got, you know, let's say like a design principle that we are always, you know, want to do everything we can to support the topic of the game. Yeah, and of course the game is about points of view, about, you know, different realities, you know, different perspectives. So yeah, it was from the beginning the idea that okay, two worlds and two composers. Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that because Arek Rykowski, our let's say in-house composer, also did like a tremendous job with this soundtrack. Yeah, so I think they both with Akira, you know, make something really special that, you know, their music complements each other, sometimes mixing and during the game we are also, you know, using like an adaptive style of music, so sometimes, you know, Their ideas are, you know, influencing each other, and the music will start to mix with the appearance of the another world. Yeah, so that was really, really cool that we were able to achieve that, and also on a music level.
Yeah, this is super cool. Let's talk about the medium a bit. It's a super fascinating game. I'm really looking forward to playing the enhanced version on PlayStation 3 this autumn. of course. But I played it on Xbox before and was super intrigued by the concept and was super... I think it's a very emotional game. You stated it before that all these psychological horror games also have this very personal stories about grief and stuff like that. Maybe you can tell me a bit more about the medium. So what was the initial idea? Where was this coming from? Is this from personal inspiration? Because it feels very personal.
Okay, so the real story behind the medium is really, really long. Yeah. So first, you know, the medium was designed like almost 8 years back or something, mm-hmm. by our boss Piotr Babieno and his wife. So the game about two words was their idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, it was a platformer.
No way.
Yeah, really, really. If you dig into internet, you will be able to find the really old concepts, for example. And the Thomas character was their main character of the game. So and there were like two words also. And the mm-hmm. character was more like a platformer game, so with different mechanics and less psychological approach than it is today, of course.
Yeah.
And yeah, the overall gameplay idea was that you have some kind of artifact that you need to, you know, absorb the light on the normal world to use it in the spirit mm-hmm. world and so on. And then the idea evolved to a third person game, and they were trying to do it like at the prep, like a, you know, prototypes back in the PlayStation 3 era. Mm-hmm. And there are also some prototypes of this game, and they had, you know, like a normal, let's say, free camera for that game.
Yeah.
And it causes a lot of troubles, and you know, let's say that the consoles weren't powerful enough back in the day to display two words at the same time. So yeah, the project was there, you know, postponed that, living, you know, lying in a drawer. Yeah, when we finished the Observer, our boss, you know, took us to a meeting and said, okay, guys, I know that the new consoles are coming and I've got this really cool idea from, you know, a few years back. Yeah. And mm-hmm. please see what would you like to do it with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of the, let's say, current version of the medium.
Yeah, this is super interesting. A platformer.
Yeah. So of course, you know, we were almost completely, you know, rearrange all of it. Yeah. So even changing the main character and so on, but leaving some bits from the old game, of course. Yeah. But the story is completely different right now. And yeah, if you ask about the story, mm-hmm. I personally believe that, you know, all the best horror stories have to resonate on personal level. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, saving the world or making super big things isn't just a good emotional journey for the player. And especially in the horror genre, which of course is at the surface, people think that, okay, horror games, movies or books are about the monsters, killings and blood. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Maybe at the surface, yeah. But at its heart, it's always a good story of a personal story about, you know, sometimes traumas, something, you know, the demons living inside of us, all of us, all the people are, you know, good mm-hmm. or bad, good and bad at the same time, yeah. You have to only to push special good strings to make them monsters, yeah. So, for example... Mm-hmm. That's why the monsters are so attractive to us, yeah, because they are some kind of, you know, reflection of our personalities hidden somewhere in our minds, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, yeah, so that's why we are always, you know, want to create really complex story about the real characters, about, you know, real feelings. Yeah. So the players, after, you know, finishing our games, may think sometimes about, you know, how will I react in the same situation? Yeah. For example.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, even if you think about the movies, so let's take the Midsummer, for example, one of my favorites from the last year. Yeah.
Definitely.
So it's a story about the couple, about the relationship between people. Yeah. So, yeah, I think this is like one of the most important things of making a really good horror game or movie or book, whatever you like.
Yeah. Do you think that horror gamers, especially when it comes to psychological horror games, also are able to learn something about themselves after playing the game? Maybe they are confronted with topics they haven't thought about before?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so even in Medium, we were, you know, thinking, okay, what will you do? Yeah, if you will be Marianne and you will have to, you know, do some. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, right.
Of course. So yeah, that's always, you know, something that resonates in our mind when creating a game. So, like, make, you know, give the situations to the player that he will remember, and he will think about, well, why I did do or that. Yeah. For example, and of course it's especially powerful in a game like with, you know, different choices and so on. But sometimes you, like in the Medium, you want to make, you know, more like a personal story of the character and you know, letting the player, you know, change the character's motivation and so on.
So talking about the personal story without spoiling too much, but I think the other word, Marianne Visits, the ghost word, really, really... Maybe you can tell me a bit more about the design of it, because it's super intriguing. But I got the feeling that it kind of mirrors the inside feelings of Marianne. Is it right?
Yeah, you are completely right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the spirit world in the Medium was inspired by Zdzisław Beksiński's paintings. Yeah, he's like a famous Polish painter. So yeah, when we were designing the second world, it was like, okay, it shouldn't be, you know, it's not a limbo, it's not a hell, and it shouldn't be, you know, based on any religion. Yeah. So that's when we, you know, figured out that, oh, look at Beksiński's paintings. Yeah. They are out of this world, but still somehow connected to our world. Yeah. Maybe the landscape is totally crazy, but there is still a rack of the car, for example, is being there, you know, connecting our world and, you know, reflecting all the emotions in the environment. So yeah, it was our idea that really, you know, the world, you know, becomes affected by the spirits that are actually there. So different locations are, you know, affected by different entities that are there. Yeah,
this is super cool. I was super intrigued by the design because it had this insect-like quality a bit, like they have like cocoons built into the environment. There was one point in the game, without spoiling it, don't worry, but there's one point in the game where you're saving people from...
Yeah, souls trapped in the hotel.
They're captured in this environment. They're part of the artwork, so to speak, and you have to free them. And this was the point where I was like, okay, wow, this is like, this really reminds me of an insect's nest somehow. And this is really, really super intriguing, super interesting. So, but there's also the other side, another inside world from another character that is totally different. So this was the point where I was like, okay, wow, this is not the other world that looks like this. This is the personal world of the people. And it looks very different from each person to person, just like in...
Yeah, that's right. Really good interpretation. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
There's another very famous horror game I know. I'm sure you know.
You are horror talking about Silent Hill 2, for example.
Yeah, Silent Hill 2, for example, that also does this. There's one key point where one character at one point says, it looks always like this for me.
Yeah, it's a really powerful scene. Yeah, it's the best one.
My head was like... on our
side. I totally feel you.
Super, super cool. But this is something really interesting because I feel like horror games really improve when they tend to use the uncertain narrator. This, I don't know if this is the correct term in English. In German, we say unzuverlässiger Erzähler, which means translated uncertain narrator, which means you can't be sure about what you are seeing. I think you nailed it in The Observer.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and maybe you can tell me a bit about more about this process, because the idea is that people in the future, it's obviously a cyberpunk game, it's playing in future, and they all got implants in their head, right? So they're seeing all kinds of technology, computer stuff, and HUD's display and stuff like that. And but when playing the game, you're not sure what is real or what is hacked.
Great, that was our goal.
Yes,
to be honest, from the very beginning, I even remember typing in the GDD like a principle that like every door may lead to a completely different world. Period. Mm. Yeah, so that was one of the, you know, design principles from that game. So as you are playing the observer, you know, the guy who, let's say, hacks or connects to the people implants to interrogate them. Mm. Yes, so you are, you know, seeing their memories and so on. But of course, it's more complex character with his own trauma and his own problems. So when he, you know, gets a message from his son that, you know, and this is like a start of him reliving his own, you know, mistakes and his own life. Yeah. And then he, of course, connects to a deceased dead person. Yeah. And he breaks all the rules that the observer has. Yeah. Never connect to to a dead mind. Yeah. Because they will interfere with yours. So that's when, you know, the roller coaster thing is happening. Yeah. So during his first interrogation with this crazy masked guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's dying during the investigation. That's why Dan, you know, breaks the rules and then connects to Helena, and the roller coaster starts. So his, you know, memories are starting to mix with the memories of those, let's say, interrogated dead bodies. Yeah.
Yeah.
And his own traumas are, you know, affecting his own reality. So yeah, that was, you know, that was the overall idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
To create, really, really, you know, roller coaster of a thing. And sometimes we are also using, like, you know, holograms to trick you.
Tricking and roller coaster, these are the keywords in the Observer. But there's also what I really find super interesting. So there's a lot of science fiction horror games out there, and they got different kind of topics. Of course, sometimes you're fighting aliens, sometimes you're fighting I don't know, ghosts or something. But if What about technology? Is there something especially yet in Observer that you think is tackling the fear of technology?
Sure it was. Yeah, it was, of course, you know, our own tackle of this, you know, really classical sci-fi questions about you know, boundaries of humanity and what makes us human, and, you know, is there any limit of the technology that we will not be human? You know, for example, implanting ourselves. And our character is a reflection of that fear. Yeah. So all his, you know, what he've done in the past, he was driven by the fear of, you know, becoming something else. Yeah. He was more like, you know, our body is more like a sacred and shouldn't be tampered with, and so on. So, and then of course he had to, you know, break all his rules to provide a life for his son and so on. So this, you know, for us, it creates a really, you know, traumatic, but also interesting story to tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one image in the intro, where you see, like, when the intro kicks in and the theme music comes in, there's a character drowning in a bathtub, I think, and you can see that he got a synthesizer right below his head, and he's about to sink into the water completely, to get killed by the water. And this was the point where I was thinking, okay, maybe we're drowning in technology.
Yeah, it's also a good interpretation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we, of course, you know, wanted to, in Poland, we have a really love for the cyberpunk genre. Yeah.
Yeah.
As you can see, Project Us, and you know, now game deck game from our friends from Anshar Studios, for example.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but we really, really dig into cyberpunk. Well, yeah, maybe it's somehow connected to, you know, our own country's history, that I think our, you know, the technological boom came really fast here in Poland. So after, let's say, like a communistic times, then we've got all, you know, all the computers, all the televisions and so on, you know, so it was some kind of maybe that feeling, and we quickly, you know, turned into good engineers, and yeah. It is, our life were influenced by all those technological stuff. Yeah,
I think this is a super interesting topic. I think one strength about horror games in general, all kinds of horror games, is that they kind of a deep personal look into the culture of the dev team behind it, or a culture that the game is about. Maybe the dev team is from Japan, for example, like Team Silent, and they're looking into American culture. And they're describing American culture from their perspective, how they see it. Or it's the other way around. It's folk horror with mythology and stuff like that. And you get an inside look, a deeply personal inside look into the culture from other games. Like Detention, for example, the Taiwanese game is super awesome game. I love it. But you too, I see.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the most amazing horror games that was done in the past. And they depict the White Terror period. It's like, I never heard anything about it before.
Me too.
Yeah. And I was playing the game. I was like, okay, it must have feel like a super big oppression, like a super depressive period. And the game kind of makes you feel like this. So how is this aspect in your game? So of course, the medium, for example, is placed in Poland and in others. And do you think that you incorporate your environment and your culture into the games?
Yeah. When I'm thinking about the medium, as I said, we were trying to, you know, design things around like a duality, for example. So even on the, you know, setting level, the medium is happening in a post-communist Poland, but talking a history that, you know, happened in the communist times. Also a clash of two worlds. I said, we are always trying to, you know, build things like this, so everything will connect to the topic. And even in the Observer, because we also, you know, based setting of the Observer on the, let's say, communist era in Poland. So it is like the, you know, like the cyberpunk boom happens in the 80s. So this was something that we haven't seen much, in, because more cyberpunk things are mostly, you know, more, let's say, clear, more technological advanced. And our approach was, you know, take this very, let's old washing machine and add some, you know, a crazy technology to it. Yeah. So it was more like, you know, people inventing their own stuff. And we feel from the beginning, okay, of course, we can make the game everywhere. Yeah, we can make it in Chicago or Los Angeles and so on. But of course, we can do our own research, like you said. But probably it will be better for us to do something, you know, something more local, something that we will just feel. Yeah. So yeah, that was the main idea. And then when we showed our concepts and, you know, first prototypes, for example, of the Observer, we received a really good feedback from different people, even from Japan. Yeah, I remember one journalist that came here said, "Wow, this is crazy cool." Yeah, and I was like, "Hey, like a, you know, this is how the staircase looks in Poland." Yeah. But yeah, we also added a few holograms here as well. It looks like, you know, from out of this world. Yeah. And I hear it even when Mamoru Oshii made the movie Avalon. Yeah. It was filmed in Poland. And I watched some interview and he said, okay, for me, it feels like a completely different world. And
For me,
Japan feels the same. Yeah. That's why it's super interesting. Yeah. And I believe it's a good time for it, because people, you know, stopped being afraid of showing their own culture. Yeah. Because all the, you know, all the mainstream media or, you know, all the mainstream movies, yeah, were more mostly America and, you know, bad guys from Mexico and all those tropes that, you know, became boring, for people.
Yeah.
And now we can feel more, you know, local stories with really good execution, you know, on the production level. For example, the Chernobyl HBO series, it's great. Awesome music, great, you know, color palette, everything fits there, for example, a dark TV series, from the Netflix, another one, you know, about the German, the German town, it's awesome, because they've got, their own culture, their own roots, and this is interesting, for the other people. It's like, you know, the cheapest ticket to some country, to buy a game or watch the movie.
I'm so happy you're saying it, because this is something I really like to stress when talking to other devs and talking to students and so on. Don't be afraid to depict your own culture. It may be boring for you at first, but you know the culture the best. And I think in the medium, you can see that in the beginning, the apartment is I was, my father is from Poland. And back back in my childhood, I was maybe a year or so in Poland, but I remember those posters. I remember those decorations, and I was like, this feels like Poland. This is really deeply European design, and the kind of floor is laid out, and the kind of material is used on the walls, and the kind of the coloring and stuff like that. This all feels very, very, this is super great. Listen, you're right. This is the same. When we're playing a Japanese game, we're like, okay, we don't know the culture that good. And if we're walking around in Project Zero, for example, in this village, in this traditional village, we're like, okay, this is super creepy, because to us, it feels very, very kind of exotic, kind of alien, because we don't know the environment, which makes it super creepy. And it's super, super strange, because in Germany, for example, you mentioned Dark, the Netflix series, about the tram traveling stuff. It's super German because of the German town, and Germans are like, well, I don't know, I don't want to see that, because this is something, and the critics from Germany are really, really harsh on the series. They're like, okay, we don't like it because it's too German, and people outside of Germany love it because it's German, because it's so German characters, German language. Language, German town, German. It's in a way presented. They had never seen Germany like this before, because they always have seen like the tropes from Hollywood movies. If you see Berlin, for example, in a Marvel movie, it's always this after the wall went down, super gray. Germany is always gray. It's always this.
And it isn't, especially Berlin, for example. I was living in Szczecin, really close to, you know, German border, so I spent a lot of weekends in Berlin, and it's a completely different city than what you will see in the movies.
Germany is nothing like that. It's nothing like that it's depicted in movies. And they even managed to catch that, even it's a very, after all, it's called Dark, a very dark series. They managed to show Germany from a very different side, and this is something I think this is really, really cool. So I got the feeling that horror games, because these are personal stories, are the best opportunity to show something different from a culture. Do you think so too?
Definitely. Yeah. So you mentioned Detention, for example. This is awesome. I also played their second game, Devotion. Also totally, you know, based on their own, let's say, folklore, and it was amazing. I love, you know, to dig into different cultures and see different things. And funny that you mentioned that people in, you know, in Germany doesn't, you know, have love for Dark TV series, because in Poland we are receiving a lot of feedback from, you know, local gamers about our games, and they are really happy. They are sending emails like, oh, I love that. For example, in The Observer, there was a vacuum cleaner. My grandma have the exact same one. Thank you for this, you know, nostalgic feeling and so on. So, it's really, really cool. And we also, you know, want to, you know, create recreate or create real locations. So the truth is that the observers, all those, you know, tenement building is based on a real building, you know, standing in Krakow, and one of our level designers is living there.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So we get there, you know, took all the photos and recreated. Of course, change a lot of things, to fit into the game. But you know, the overall structure and this yard is actually the real place. Yeah.
This is super cool because I really love the microcosm the Observer game is building up, because it's the total opposite of Cyberpunk. So Cyberpunk is this vast city with Cyberpunk 2077. It's this vast city, and it's this huge environment. You got the outside world of the city and stuff like that. And Observer really concentrates on one apartment building. And I got the impression of the, I don't know if I pronounce it right, but the Kowloon building in China. This abandoned building where a lot of people lived in. I don't know if that's the right name. Kowloon?
Not sure, to be honest. But I know you are talking about this gigantic building. Yeah.
That was taken down a few years back, and people are trying to remember it. And there's also a horror game about this. I think it's called Kowloon's Gate or so it's called.
Do
you remember?
Yes.
I got the same feeling from playing Observer because it's super cramped. It's like super small buildings and stuff like super small apartments and so on. Yeah.
Great. It was also our, design decision to do it. Yeah. To put a lot of people there, you know, trapped in their apartment, living in this small worlds of theirs. Yeah. So it was like a story of the, you know, people living in the same block. Yeah. In the same building. Because probably it also came from our history, because in Poland we've got a lot of, you know, tenement buildings like this, most of us, you know, developers of the Observer were raised in such an environment, so every one of us remembers, okay, there was like an old good lady giving us apples when we were kids, and this crazy old prick that always yells at us because we were, you know, playing football or something at the yard, and you know, so and all those people have their own, you know, personal stories to tell. So that was the idea of, you know, creating tenement building, but also habited with, you know, the real persons who may be there. And when we, you know, finished the dialogue sessions, you know, add all the dialogues to the people living there, it was, you know, really a breakthrough for the game, because it was first, okay, going there, you know, solving the case, but when, you know, the people show up there and the players start, or playtesters start, you know, to talk with them, so, whoa, this is really cool,
This is cool. You mentioned Avalon before. Of course, I've seen Avalon 2, a great movie. And I think the beautiful thing about Avalon is when the main character, I forgot her name, but when she turns off all the cyberspace, cyberpunk stuff and is in this living world, being with her dog, film suddenly comes from depressing to beautiful, because she starts to see and appreciate the world around her. And there's one particular scene that is really, really great and really sad, where she's preparing the meal for her dog, and then color comes in. So the color grading is kind of yellowish, something like that, sepia, and then the color comes back the way when she is starting to cook. Because she realizes this is real life, and this is something she can touch. And I got the same feeling in Observer, because I think the apartment building and the apartments wouldn't be that bad if all the holograms wouldn't be. But the holograms try to hide. It seems like they try to hide to make the lives of people better, because they can't. Maybe is this the right direction? Is something you want to do?
Yes, that's right. Even when you are actually, you know, entering the building, it's more covered with holograms. Yeah, so they are hiding, you know, all those rotten walls behind them. Yeah, that was the idea. Yeah, that the people are, you know, covering their poor lives with the technology. Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah, so living in, you know, virtual realities room and so on to fulfill their dreams, but still you know, being trapped in more, let's say, sad and harsh environment.
Do you think this is the future we're heading to?
Probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when I'm thinking about you know, the pandemic times and if we will have, you know, VR headsets during that times, we will probably be using it, yeah? Like people are using, you know, all other things that are able to transport them into the other worlds, like playing games, reading books, it's quite the same, yeah? Because you can, you know, feel emotions, and you know, it's like a form of art, do it. And probably, maybe at some point, you know, people will use virtual reality to gather somewhere, go to a concert or something, without, you know, going there in real life. But I don't know if it's good or not.
I think the pandemic is a good point, because a few games really hit different now because of the pandemic. For example, I played Returnal beginning of this year. Super awesome science fiction.
Yeah, I love it. Love it.
I love it too. I see we like the same game, so this is great.
especially because they've got, you know, they've put you like a they've done the game and they put a really nice story to find there. Yeah. So it's really cool that our people, new games are, you know, mixing really good combat mechanics. So things that you should be thinking that, maybe it will not work. It's a bullet hell plus good psychological story.
Yeah.
And it works.
It works really well. I think when it's one of the best
sound designs, absolutely amazing.
I know it's an interview about Bluebird Team, but we have to share a Schausmarke here.
We are all also gamers here. And we have to, you know, support each other.
Especially from European developers are kind of underrepresented in the world currently. But I think games like Returnal show that there's super amazing developers here. Of course, also Control, also a good game. This is really nice. I feel like European horror games are coming to are showing that there's something different. Also, A Plague Tale is also from Europe, I think. Also a very interesting horror game. This is something I really see more about this later, but what I wanted to point out is that the pandemic really gives the games a new different spotlight, and Returnal was this kind of time loop we were sitting in. I was thinking about the Nine Inch Nails song "Every Day Is Exactly the Same." Like you're repeating. You're sitting in home office and you're feeling like that everything repeats. And when I was playing Observatory Dux, the enhanced version of your game, I really got a totally different feeling when playing the game, because all the people are way off shut in. So what do you think? Yeah. Do you think that the pandemic will influence future games from you? Will this be a topic that will be part of, or of maybe other horror games?
Maybe even on, you know, some subconscious level, the world always affects us. Yeah, and we are, you know, built of our memories, our fears, based on those memories, of course. Yeah. So when we were designing the Observer and we know. Design this nano phage issue, you know, all those. It was kind of a pandemic, for the people with the implants, So of course we wasn't expect that it will hit us in a normal life, especially on those crazy, you know, level of affecting the whole world. Working from home isn't, you know, good for everyone. For example, I was, you know, one of the first guys who get back to the office because I just feel tired, you know, of working from home. As you said, I was waking up, getting to my desk, and then returning to play some games or something. Especially like the first months when we got to, you know, more strict lockdown. It was really hard for me, for example. That we were, you know, in the middle of finishing the medium game. And it was like, oh my God, how we will pull it off right now. So even we have to organize a mock-up sessions, remote mock-up sessions.
Yeah.
So you have to imagine that we connect like with you today,
yeah,
and we talk with actors what they have to do.
Oh, God, yeah.
Instead of being there directing everything and so on. So, yeah, that was a crazy ride sometimes, yeah, to finish it on time. And, yeah, still we've got, you know, I'm really, you know, happy of what we achieved with the game.
Yeah, yeah.
But at that point, I was, you know, super afraid.
I feel like that a lot of people underestimate how hard it is to switch to home office because as a studio, you need the infrastructure to getting, you know, to leak all the system, the cloud system, to get all the files across to other people. You need to, all the remote work is a totally different structure. And if you don't have this from the beginning, it's super hard to build up during a production. Right.
Yeah, we of course used a lot of, you know, let's say call them cloud tools before. So yeah, from the, you know, technical point of view, we were, you know, be operating within 2 days. Yeah, it's thanks to our awesome producers and IT guys who arrange everything. Yeah. You know, transport computers, dev kits, and so on to the people. And
oh, was ist denn jetzt passiert? Da ist einfach mal das Interview unterbrochen worden. Was geht hier vor? Oh, ich sehe schon. Die Verbindung ist nämlich einfach abgebrochen. Ja, hier ist das Originalinterview tatsächlich jetzt mal ganz ohne Scherz nicht mehr aufgenommen worden. Da hatten wir ein technisches Problem, einen technischen Fehler. Und deshalb haben Wojciech und ich uns einfach 2 Wochen später wieder getroffen, um den Rest des Interviews aufzunehmen. Es war ein bisschen blöd. Der war nämlich zwischendurch dann im Urlaub und wir hatten dann halt ein bisschen, eine kleine, etwas größere Pause dann zwischen dem Gespräch. Aber ich wollte es halt so lassen, ist halt in St. Moin, weil hier kommt es mir auch darauf an, dass es irgendwie sehr authentisch wirkt und dass da jetzt nicht irgendwie rumgeschnippelt wird und so. Und deshalb geht es jetzt hier an dieser Stelle direkt weiter mit dem zweiten Teil. Viel Spaß!
Yeah, so we can skip all the introduction and stuff. Super happy that you're back from the vacation.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned before, the audience will be a bit irritated, but we had to re-record the ending because of a technical issue. But I'm super happy you're back, you're refreshed, you can answer the last questions again.
Yeah. Great to be here again. Thank you.
Yeah. But the thing is, you were on vacation in this break. And this is something that wasn't possible before because of the pandemic. And this was basically the last question where the technical difficulty started in the middle. How did the pandemic affect your studio and the work on the medium?
Okay, so yeah, pandemic hit us hard in the middle of, you know, finishing the project. We are, you know, in the middle of the production. I think the most hard part, of course, we all had to work from home for like 3 months. Mm. It was, you know, hard lockdown in Poland. Mm-hmm. And then some of us were able to get back to the office, but yeah, we are still working, you know, let's say in a mixed variant. So some of us are still working remotely, some of us are in the studio. So I'm, for example, a guy who loves to work in the studio because, you know, bigger room,
yeah,
better internet and stuff like this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the most hard part was to record cutscenes remotely. Yes. So basically, you know, connected via Zoom to mock-up studio and we were, you know, directing actors by seeing all those them from cameras. So this was really, really difficult. Yeah. And especially that we have to, you know, make some sacrifices. So, for example, the voice actor who should, you know, play also like on the cutscene have to be replaced by the actor in Poland who was, you know, playing with his or her body. And then we had to record the voice to the, you know, the body flow. So yeah, it was hard to do it. So this was, I think, the most hard part, to, you know, to not record one, let's call it seamless session, but to record parts and then connect them, have all the animators to, you know, tweak it and fix all the issues that, you know, were created by this type of approach.
I imagine directing the scene is super difficult when you're not there.
Right? Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, and you cannot get also the angle you are seeing the situation is kind of super limited because you just got the camera. You cannot walk around the actors and stuff like that.
Yeah, we've got, you know, a few cameras that we can connect to them from the different angles. Some of them were, you know, we were able to manipulate them, you know, change the angle, but, you know, it's nothing comparing to being there, of course.
Yeah. I imagine this is super difficult. How about the, others have the same problems too, like Akira with the voice of Mary Elizabeth, for example? Did they also record in the studio or had they do it remotely?
They were doing it remotely, but Akira and our composer Arek Rykowski were, you know, working remotely from the beginning of the project. So Akira came to Poland, you know, to see the game, to talk with us, you know, to kickstart it. And then after a few months, he came back to do it again, where we were, you know, more further into the production. But most of time they were working remotely, so this was natural for them.
Yeah, kind of makes sense because of the huge distance country wise. But it's super difficult when I think like this is the normal state right now, right? So did you have difficulties transferring files and stuff like that? Is this also a problem?
No. We've got, you know, good servers here, and the infrastructure was created within, you know, like a days by our IT team to do it. So, yeah, all kudos to them. They, you know, get computers to everyone who were, you know, trapped in a home, let's say. And, yeah, they've set up everything within 2 days, and we were fully operating. So, yeah, that was amazing. And, of course, a lot of people were helping each other. Like, I've got a car, I will, you know, give it to you. I will drive and take this to that guy, or dev kit here or there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was, you know, power of the team. Yeah. I'm really proud of our team.
This, I think such a situation like the pandemic also tightens the team together, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. You're separated in your homes, but in a way you're kind of working harder together.
Yeah, and we'll still be able to, you know, take each other's back in the tough situations. So that was really cool and heartwarming to see.
Yeah, super cool. In the end, it turned out pretty good because the medium got released at the beginning of the year and got with critical acclaim. And people were very, very fond of the fixed camera perspectives and the dual words view where you split the screen and stuff like that. And this is basically what comes to my next question, is the design of games that have fixed camera perspectives. How difficult was it for you to approach this? And was there a specific reason to do this? Did you have this in your mind from the beginning, or was this like a decision you made me later?
Yeah, so this is the approach that we took after, you know, several iterations and tests of the medium. So it started as a, let's say, normal free camera. But it creates a lot of, let's call it like a motion sickness, something similar to VR for some players. Because, you know, two cameras were rotating and some of the players get like a dizziness or just want to puke. Yeah, so this was the first issue. And the second issue was the players couldn't be able to focus on the both screens at the same time. So we noticed that playtesters are, for example, entering the room and going around the room twice. But the first time they were looking on the normal world, for example, and the other circle was looking on the spirit world, for example. That's why it was, you know, our design decision. So, like, okay, we are doing like a really cinematic horror game. It's the story is the most important part of it. And this cinematic feeling maybe also be bumped up by this old school fixed camera angles. So we talked with our camera team and we tried this approach. And for the first time, the players were able to focus on the both screens, yeah, because the screens are more still. Yeah, of course, we are using, you know, camera pans and they are not super stiff. But still, players were entering the room and can easily compare, okay, this is here, this is okay. Okay, I know what to do, yeah? This is like a good decision to do it. And yeah, and I think it also bumps up the atmosphere of the game, yeah, with this something that we are not want to show you right now. yeah, we can do it. Sometimes it also helps us to deliver, to grab your attention on the things that we want you to see, yeah, because, for example, when we were creating the Observer, I saw a lot of situations where we, for example, set up some crazy thing that will happen in the corridor, I see the player entering the corridor. I know he or she enters the triggers because this light starts to blink and then the player goes around and everything is happening behind their back, for example. So it doesn't happen in the medium, for example.
To guide the player is totally different in fixed camera perspective, right?
So,
from there first person, you never know where they look. There is the cheap trick to control the camera use from the game itself, but it doesn't feel right for most players. So you give them all the freedom, but you have to guide them with sounds or with blinking stuff or so on. And
That's right. Of course, in a first-person game, we know where the center of the screen is, for example. We can set up a look at this, but we don't want to, take over the camera. So if you look at this and it will triggers, then you can, look there and miss it, for example.
Does also the design of scares change? So to introduce something scary or to do a scare effect, is this something that is totally different from fixed camera perspective?
Yeah, I think it's different, because here we can, play with what's behind the camera, not what's behind the doors, for example. If you hear the sound, see a corridor, and we know that, you will see something. Even you will see something, on your foreground, not only on the background, So, there are different tricks to pull off.
The different layers of the image, of course. Got the four. I see. So also what about the introduction of the room? I think one of the most amazing aspects of games in general, especially in horror games, is entering a new room you don't know anything about, like exploring and stuff like that. I think it also feels very different from these different perspectives. How did this influence your work on this?
Yeah, the doors in fixed camera angles are also tricky because you always have to show them when the players enters the room because at some point he would like to go back. And if you put the camera behind the door, behind the player, he will not be able to locate the exit. There are some pros and cons of doing these fixed camera angles.
But also you can do wide shots to introduce interesting things like the swimming pool, for example.
That's right.
They got this super large, super wide shot that is really unsettling.
Thank you.
Because you feel like there's the big forest in the background and you feel like suddenly it's not this closed-in atmosphere, it's like more open. And you're trapped in this building. It feels like there's a super huge danger coming from the outside. And when you switch to the surreal, to the nightmarish world, there is, in fact, something in the background, some creature, and you can see from the distance, and it feels super eerie.
Cool. Yeah, it's thanks to our awesome artists and camera team. To be honest, we hired, the new camera team for the medium.
This would be my next question. Did you approach this from a filmmaker's perspective? Did you...
Yes, that's totally correct. Yeah, yeah. We hired like camera artists, you know, from the let's say normal movies.
yeah,
to pull it off. Yeah,
but it makes sense in this case, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that these kind of fixed camera perspectives will be something that we will not see in the future of horror games? Not so often. There's not that many games who try to get this approach, because a lot of players seem to have a little bit of get some time to get used to it. Right? What do you think? Will this be coming back?
Yeah, probably, but I think it will not, you know, go mainstream again. Yeah, I saw a lot of people playing those kind of games saying, oh, I hate this type of controls. And yeah. most of them are young, not used to it. Yeah, but yeah. On the other hand, of course, we've got a lot of feedbacks from, let's say, older player.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, thank you. This is something awesome. It really reminds me of the old school survival horror games that I used to play when I was younger and so on. This is like a nostalgic feeling. It's also very, very powerful. And yeah, of course, yeah. In my opinion, it all depends on the gameplay type. Yeah. It's really hard to do a good action game with this type of approach. Yeah. But if you will stick to let's say more narrative driven games, that's cool to do it.
It seems like in general that that horror games nowadays are more in the hands of indie devs.
yeah that's right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of cool stuff on Steam, for example, from smaller developers who are trying out some crazy things. And how do you feel about it? Do you think that the indie games or that indie developers are kind of doing the pioneer work for the mainstream? For example, Resident Evil 7 wouldn't have happened without all the stuff that the indie games did with the first person perspective.
Yeah, sure. I totally agree with you. I think the indies are pushing the boundaries because, you know, making, you know, bigger AAA games, it's always, you know, like we have to have a big audience to sell it, yeah, because we spend a lot of money on the development. And of course, when you are making horror game, it's some kind of a niche from the beginning, yeah? It's not for everyone, yeah? So from, let's say, this cake, you can have only this part, in terms of cash, of course, yeah. But yeah, still, in my opinion, horrors right now will have some kind of a resurrection time. Yeah, I think, you know, this new Resident Evil, for I know it's still more action, yeah, but yeah, there are games that are cool, and I think people are into horror again, yeah? Even on the Netflix series, like a new The Midnight Mass, for example, it's really cool. And I think it's bringing more audience to the horror again.
Yeah, so talking about niche, this also relates to about what people are afraid of, right? So I think fear is, it's like humor. You don't laugh about the same joke. You don't think everything is funny. It's not the same joke. It's not funny to everyone. So it's like with fear, it's the same, right? It's like you're not scared of the same things. And in horror, it's super, from your perspective as a developer, how difficult is it to approach this, to scare people and to be specific about some kind of scary things?
Yeah, to be honest, you know, the easiest part is to make jump scares. Yeah, that's why we want to avoid them as much as possible in the medium. Yeah, so the hardest part is to, you know, constantly build the atmosphere of dread and build it. So the player or the audience will feel that something will happen.
Yeah.
But the best part is when it's not happening. And you are constantly on your toes. But of course, the players are, you know, you can't keep them on their toes for the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have to, you know, build and drop. Yeah. And this is something really important to not, you know, to make a lot of jump scares and so on. So the atmosphere for me is the most important thing.
Yeah. So jump scare is more like a physical reaction. Like it's loud, something jumps into your face, your body is like, okay, I got this loud sound effect and you're reacting to it and this feels like something scary, but in fact it isn't.
yeah. We've got one scene like this in the Medium, for example. Yeah, and yeah. So a lot of videos on the YouTube that people are jumping on their chairs or something. Yeah. But to be honest, I've put it there to do it once so the players will, you know, feel that it may happen again.
I see. Ah. but what about phobias? So, for example, some people are afraid of spiders and some people are afraid of heights and stuff like that. And how do you approach this from a horror game designer? Do you put different kind of phobias into the game so that you make sure that different kind of people are scared? Or how specific can you be?
No, to be honest, in Bluebird Team, we are always, you know, trying to build everything around the central motives of the game. Mm-hmm. So we are not, you know, choosing, okay, let's take spiders there. Spiders will be there if they, you know, they are symbolic or something will fit the game. Yeah. So right now we are not, you know, doing stuff like this. Of course, sometimes we think, yeah, like, okay, you have to do something scary. Maybe we make a lot of holes, like a trypophobia or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, still have to, in our approach, it have to, you know, connect with the story, with all the symbolism of the game.
Yeah. But the story itself also approaches some kind of, maybe phobia is not the right word, but some kind of fears people have, right? There is the fear of trauma, especially in the Medium, it's all about trauma, but it will probably not reach every person, every player. Maybe some players are like, I don't get it. I don't see what the fuss is all about. Is this a difficulty for horror games in general to provide something that is scary?
Yeah, I think, you know, to do it, we need to an AI to, you know, track the player and think, okay, this guy is, you know, for example, afraid of spiders, so let's drop more of them. Yeah, but I still think, you know, some fears, like, you know, fear of the dark, of the unknown, are totally universal. Yeah? So there is always a way to scare people.
This can be understood all in the world, basically. This is like the primal fears that everybody got.
Yeah, that's right. And in terms of primal fear, yeah, it's really easier to, you know, scare people in the environment that your brain can relate to. Yeah. So, for example, the scary forest, yeah, everyone was in the forest. Most of the people were in the forest during a night or evening or something, and I know that something is always there in the grass or behind the tree and all those sounds. And yeah, your brain knows it, and yeah, when it's also happening on the screen, your brain relates to it and you are scared. So it's always easier to create games in this kind of environment. So sci-fi games, for example, are harder, you know, to scare players because no one was on a spaceship, or maybe a few people.
That's true. But to mention a super famous example, like Dead Space, for example, I think they approach the Ishimura, the spaceship, more like a meat grinder. It feels like you're stuck inside a huge machine that is trying to tear you apart. And I think the feeling, you got more freedom in design of the environment.
Every room is working somehow, like the machinery constantly creating very loud sounds. And the monsters in that game are, you know, not the monsters that appear somewhere behind the wall. No, they are spawning and constantly attacking you, creating the tension. They are, you know, pulling a lot of different strings, and they are doing it perfectly in the Dead Space. Yeah, I love Dead Space 1. Yeah.
Dead Space is. Are you looking forward to the remake?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. It looks. I think it looks great. I'm really looking forward. It's they showed some early footage of it, and I was like, okay, wow, this is already very nice. Yeah, as you mentioned before we started the recording, you mentioned a forest before. You have seen in the on vacation. This is like This is, I think, to forest, a lot of people can relate somehow. There's all kinds of different forests and also the fog. And yeah, this is something, even if you have never been in a forest, which is unlikely, but some people have never been, there's some feeling in the back that you that this kind of evokes. Also, walking around in large natural fields and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people can relate.
Yeah, and that forest on the Madeira that I visited with my wife, that was amazing. It's called the Funnel Forest, if someone you can Google it. It produces a lot of water. It's at the top of the mountains, so it's almost constantly covered with fog. And it looks amazing, and there are cows there. But of course, of the fog, you see only for the few meters, and you constantly hear like, and you never know. Amazing place.
Oh, amazing. Well, I have to look it up.
Funnel Forest.
Did you make photos of it? Or? Basically, it's difficult to make photos if everything is full of fog, right?
Yeah, I think it's not.
Yeah. Cool.
Fog is covering everything.
That's right. This is something we learned from Silent Hill, right?
Yeah.
Fog is covering everything. Yeah, it's super cool. So what do you think? Does the horror genre have an amazing future ahead? Or
yeah, as I mentioned before, I feel that the horror genre is, you know, back on track, and more and more people are getting interested in it again. So yeah, you know, fingers crossed. I'm really looking for all those crazy games that will show up.
And also it feels great that everybody's doing something totally different. Like your Bloober team is doing something totally different to, for example, the team from Tormented Souls, like Dual Effect, and those guys are doing something completely different than Song of Horror and so on. And this year alone, there's so many different horror games. Inside Mind got released recently, which also looks, again, super different to all the games that came before. And this is something really great. It's not just zombies and then we call it a day. even Resident Evil is trying to reinvent itself with Village, for example, which is super different to all the games that came before it. I think this is super amazing that people are trying out new things. And for the most part, players also seem to like it, to find their horror niche in this super amazing world of indie horror games.
Yeah, that's right. I'm really looking forward to the future of horror.
Yeah, nice. So thank you very much again. Thank you again for this interview. Thank you for taking the time to re-record the ending of this.
No worry. My pleasure. Pleasure is mine.
And thank you everybody for listening. Thank you everybody for watching. You can find Bloober's team's games basically on all platforms. They're on Switch, they're on Xbox, PC, and PS4. Of course, the medium got released on all major platforms like PS4. You recently released a PS5 version with DualSense support and stuff like that. And DualSense support, maybe want to add one small sentence to this. I think the DualSense support is pretty cool in the game.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it adds a lot. Yeah. Especially that blinking light when the monster is closer to you and you are playing, you know, in the dark room, it really makes a good atmosphere.
Yeah.
Like, you know, holding the alien detector or something in your hands.
I think this is something this is really looking forward, because with games like Returnal, for example, I realized it's also one of my favorite games of the year. I think the way they approach the DualSense is like, wow. And this was the first time I was thinking, okay, this is a layer not many games approached before. What do you think about it, about this haptic layer?
Yeah, I really love it. Yeah, especially for making the atmosphere. Yeah.
Even,
you mentioned, for example, Returnal. Yeah, it gives an awesome feeling when you feel the rain, you know, hitting you in your spacesuit, for example. Yeah, so there are a lot of things that you can do and you know, the player will be able to feel that something is in his hands or her hands. Yes, yeah? Mm. So, yeah, a lot of haptic feedback, and of course, adaptive triggers are also nice. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can jump something, you know, press and it doesn't work in a horror. So yeah, I think we will, you know, we will be exploring this.
Yeah, I think you did already in the medium, and it kind of makes sense with Marianne. She's a character that is already very sensitive to emotions and all the outside atmosphere that comes from the outside. I think it makes total sense to have a special dual sense feeling. Now I got used to it because of many PlayStation 5 games. When I get back to PS4 or maybe Xbox, I'm kind of disappointed because it doesn't feel like.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah. Like someone, you know, cut off one of your senses.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much for this interview. Looking forward for your next project. I can't wait. I can't wait, and I wish you and all listeners and our viewers a nice day.
Thank you for having me here. Bye bye.
Bye.
So, das war das Interview mit Wojciech. Ich hoffe, ihr hattet Spaß. Sorry für diese kleine lustige Unterbrechung dazwischen. Das war irgendwie auch ganz geil, dass wir versucht haben, an derselben Stelle weiterzumachen wie vor 2 Wochen. Und man merkt richtig, wie er aus dem Urlaub wiedergekommen ist. Und so viel erholter klingt und viel, viel entspannter klingt und nicht so kaputt. Das ist, fand ich dann doch irgendwie noch ganz witzig. Die ganzen Sachen von Lubabatin, die sind ja allgemein bekannt. Jetzt gerade gibt's ja auch den ganzen Halloween-Sale und so weiter. Da gibt's halt viele Spiele von denen auch gerade im Angebot, falls euch da mal was interessiert. Observer und die Medium sind halt auch als Retail-Version rausgekommen. Für die Sammler unter euch, da ist dann halt auch der Soundtrack mit dabei und Artbook und den ganzen Schlons. Also Zeug, bei dem Manu jetzt mit dem Kopf schüttelt. Wer braucht das? Wer stellt sich den Scheiß ins Regal? Meine Antwort ist ich. Ja, es wird noch mehr Interviews in den nächsten Wochen geben. Ich habe sehr viele Interviews geführt. Ich freue mich drauf. Da wird auch ein anderes Horrorspiel-Interview dabei sein, und zwar zu In Sound Mind. Auch ein ziemlich cooles Spiel, das jetzt in den letzten Wochen erschienen ist. Ein Spiel, wo ich auch hoffe, dass ich irgendwann noch mal eine Besprechung dazu machen kann. Aber hier schon mal eine Empfehlung von meiner Seite. In Sound Mind ist wirklich echt gut. Und vom Konzept her was komplett anderes als die Bluebar-Spiele, aber gefällt mir persönlich auch super gut. Und dazu habe ich auch schon ein Gespräch aufgenommen, und das werde ich dann auch noch mal so um Halloween herum oder so auf jeden Fall auch noch mal senden, weil irgendwie macht das ja thematisch Sinn. Jo, dann wünsche ich euch viel Spaß mit der restlichen Woche, die da jetzt bei InsertMore noch kommt. Wir nehmen jetzt gleich den Metroid-Cast auf. Freunde, Metroid-Thread. Geilo! Das wird gut. Bis dann. Tschüss.